Welcome back here on Can't Wait, and we are going to get into some of our favorite sports movies, because even though sports TV shows have had a hard time getting traction in a way that you would think, sports movies seem to come out all the time. Some of the greatest films of all time deal with sports, and Bill Simmons, formerly of ESPN, made an entire career out of talking about sports movies and ranking them and talking about them. So I want to get into it. Let's see, what's your favorite sports movie? Just right off the top of your head, Matt Milner, give me your favorite sports movie.
My favorite sports movie comes out on November 25th, 2015, and it's Creed.
Oh, that's going to be good. That's going to be good.
Have you guys seen this trailer?
Oh, my God.
I have.
It hit every pleasure center in my brain.
Yeah.
It's so good. I love the trailer. Just as the art of trailer making is always very interesting to me, because it's you know, the struggle is how much do you reveal and when do you reveal it, you know, in the trailer. So I love the idea that they were confident enough to go really three quarters of the way through the trailer, making some, in some cases, not so subtle allusions to its connection to the Rocky franchise, but not acknowledging it expressly in any way,
right,
and not naming names, and making it seem like, wow, this is actually just going to be a really, you know, really cool, well done, kind of hard hitting view of, you know, a boxer who's, you know, overcoming adversity and doing the kind of classic sports movie thing. Appeal to all the fans of The Wire by having Michael B. Jordan, but also Avon Barksdale,
yeah,
as well, in a good role there.
Well, Wood Harris seems to be a boxer in every other thing he does, because he was a boxer in The Wire.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah,
that's true. He must have been a boxer.
Yeah,
at one point, like, you know, an amateur boxer, yeah, or something, to keep getting back in that role. Anyway, it's really great, and then they have enough, like, sort of faith in the audience that you'll stay hooked for that minute and a half before they drop the big reveal of being in the bar with Rocky.
It's really good.
That's going to be great.
You know, it's funny, because I'm glad you brought up Creed, because those Rocky movies are just always on TV.
Mm-hmm.
They're always going to be on TV. And for whatever reason, that has hit the American culture in a way that I don't even think Stallone expected in 1975 when he wrote that first one.
Yeah.
The first Rocky's a really, like, a genuinely good film.
It's a brilliant film.
It's great.
It stands up as a film in and of itself. It's not just hype.
Yeah, it's not like, because Rocky, you know, Rocky 3 is really silly. Rocky 4 is insane. Rocky 5 is straight up bad. And I went and saw Rocky Balboa in the theater, and even though that is a nonsense movie with probably the silliest line in any film. Okay, we're going to get into it. You remember, have you seen Rocky Balboa?
I have not.
No.
I'm going to spoil the line for you.
That's okay. So, I'm probably never going to see
it.
It's okay, so the conceit of this movie, they got actual heavyweight champion Antonio Tarver, or light heavyweight champion, at the time was the champion in his weight class.
Mm-hmm.
Not a very good actor, but it didn't matter. He didn't have that many. His name is Mason the Line Dixon, which is nonsense.
That's great.
and so he's Mason the Line Dixon. He's the heavyweight champion of the world, but everybody still loves Rocky, right? And so on ESPN, they set up one of those, like, computer simulation deals where it's like Mason the Line Dixon fighting Rocky and who would win. And everybody, like, time stopped. Like, everybody stopped what they were doing to watch this SportsCenter clip of an animation? No. But that's what happens. And so, it's a close fight. Rocky ends up winning. And somebody tells Sylvester Stallone, this computer simulation's got people talking. And from then on, he trains and fights him. He's 55 at this point, and that's the movie.
Wow. Yeah.
This simulation's got people talking.
I saw Number 5 at the theater.
And with Tommy Morrison.
Tommy Morrison, yes, who also...
Tommy Gunn?
Yeah, Tommy Gunn. Terrible, terrible movie that really was all over the place. The soundtrack was a mess. Just everything about that movie was an absolute mess.
Rocky's kid.
Yeah, Rocky's kid. there is, you know, it is kind of sweet when he's telling his kid, I remember holding you in this one hand, yeah. You know, and that's sweet. And as a father, I can see that.
But that's the stove was that holds you in my hand. It's less sweet.
That's good.
But I'll do this voice as a segment for this. This is the thing. But so Creed is a great call.
Yeah. And I mean, obviously, there's a lot that can go wrong. I have a lot of faith in the fact, though, that like they got a real director to do it.
Yeah.
I mean, the guy who directed Fruitvale Station that also starred Michael B. Jordan. And it looks like they're trying to make a serious movie that just
real movie.
That just happens to be kind of connected to the Rocky universe.
It's the right star at the right time mm-hmm. and the right kind of movie for him to be in.
Yeah.
And what's funny is, in addition to Creed, we also have Jake Gyllenhaal that's going to be in that Southpaw movie
yeah.
later this summer.
Yeah.
And while boxing is essentially off the public radar now that Floyd Mayweather and Manny Pacquiao fought in a fight that was abysmally boring,
mm-hmm.
boxing is no longer... I can't even conjure a fight that would get people in America to care
mm-hmm.
anymore.
Nope.
It would have to be the Klitschko brothers fighting over a woman or some insane thing.
Fighting for the love of Vladimir Putin.
Yeah, right. Like, preventing World War III.
Right, yeah.
And it would have to be the Klitschko brothers fighting over that.
Right.
That's the only boxing match I think that could get people to care. But Hollywood keeps churning out these boxing movies. And some of the most memorable sports films of all time have been about boxing.
Mm-hmm.
Raging Bull transcends sports movies for
oh,
a million different reasons. But Robert De Niro's portrayal of Jake LaMotta is still among the high watermarks for what actors can do on screen.
Mm-hmm.
And there's always going to be an interest in these for these A-list actors to get in that ridiculous shape and train and learn how to box and just be shirtless on screen and dumb. It's a star-making role from Will Smith.
Million Dollar Baby.
Million Dollar, yeah, exactly. Hilary Swank getting to do it.
Mm-hmm.
You got to see Mark Wahlberg do it for The Fighter.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You know, he's my kid brother. It's out of everything he knows.
And, you know, it's still a very watchable movie. Like, even though you know exactly what's happening in it, and it pulls every cliche out of the bag, but it's still a very watchable film. I
totally.
Had an enjoyable time watching The Fighter.
Yeah, it's boxing is always, it's got a dramatic arc that syncs up with movies. I don't think boxing will ever truly go away just solely because they want to keep making movies about it.
Yeah.
I mean, Gyllenhaal is exactly the kind of guy you would expect to seek out a boxing movie. Russell Crowe sought out a boxing movie. He wanted to make Cinderella Man. That was a story he wanted to tell with Ron Howard. And I could see like Chris Hemsworth doing a boxing movie
mm-hmm.
or who'd be another one? Like Michael B. Jordan.
Right now, it looks like Drake is training to be in a boxing movie.
Drake's a little too big.
He's getting
a little too big. But yeah, there's always going to be a market for this, even if the American public's appetite for boxing is almost gone entirely.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to get it from movies. We haven't seen a lot of UFC or Ultimate Fighting in movies. The only one that comes to mind is, I don't know if either of you have seen Warrior with Tom Hardy.
I have not yet.
No,
I've heard
no.
It's very good, though.
A+. It's sure. awesome.
Mm-hmm.
Nick Nolte, it's great. Watch it tomorrow. But it hasn't translated to that yet. I don't think you can make a UFC movie better than what Warrior turned out to be, but I feel like there's always going to be a good boxing movie every couple years.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know why that is. I guess just because of the way that up from nothing into something, it always...
Yeah, well, it's good storytelling, right? I
yeah.
mean, it is one of those things that you can really build a story around, is this person trying to overcome their own obstacles,
right.
and then there's another obstacle in their path that's a person.
Yeah.
I mean...
Controlled violence.
Yeah, controlled violence. You've got violence in it, which is something people tend to like. And I'll tell you, this segues fairly well into my favorite movie, sports film of all time, is When We Were Kings.
Oh,
which is about
amazing.
The Rumble in the Jungle. Yeah. Oh, it's an amazing film. James Brown is in it.
Mm-hmm.
It's just really great. Young Don King is really amazing in it. And again, it works really well in telling a story that's even bigger than boxing.
Yeah.
Right? This is about a country that's struggling. This is about a crazy dictator. And it's a little bit about African Americans and what it means to be an African American in America, right?
Mm-hmm.
When Ali's talking and he's saying something about, you know, you've got brothers in Mississippi and cousins in Mississippi and Alabama that you don't even know yet, and I'm going to show you these people, and I'm going to bring them to you. That it's so brilliant. It works in so many ways, that film. Just one of my all-time favorite movies in general, but easily my favorite sports film. And I love Hoop Dreams, and whenever I look at my favorite sports films, tend to be documentaries. I tend to like documentaries best anyway, but I also would throw out Bull Durham as my favorite baseball film of all time. Just very watchable, very fun. Kevin Costner before he became a huge jerk. It's a very entertaining little film.
We're going to double we're doubling back to Kevin Costner because he's been in you know, not to mix metaphor. He's hit the cycle, basically. He's been in every kind of sports movie.
Right.
Yeah.
But I want to go back to When We Were Kings for a second. And what that movie does is it shows why it's so hard to make a movie about Muhammad Ali. Because when Will Smith did all the training and worked as hard as he's ever worked before to nail Muhammad Ali, he expected to be delivered an Oscar for the work that he did with Michael Mann on that film. Mm-hmm. It's a pretty good movie. It's a pretty good performance. But the whole time, he's not Muhammad Ali. Mm-hmm. Muhammad Ali is, without question, the most compelling sports figure that's ever lived. He spoke in this real sing-songy way that is inimitable. It's specific to him. Mm-hmm. And he meant something in an era when athletes could transcend their sport in that way. Socio-political climate meshed with what Ali's message was at the time. And you can't make a fictionalized movie about him when there's all this footage of him being compelling already. So when you want to see the real thing has already been filmed. Mm-hmm. That's hard to do. That's another thing that you run into with these sports movies and sports TV shows when you're trying to replicate what already existed in the most compelling fashion. You're only going to fall short. I mean, the whole time I watched Ali, all I could think is, yeah, Will Smith, you know, he's doing a pretty good job of this. But I wasn't absorbed into the film the way I was when I watched, you know, De Niro do Jake LaMotta. Mm-hmm. And that's probably because there's not all this footage of Jake LaMotta being fascinating.
Right.
You know, he's just kind of a scruffy, you know, down on his luck guy, where a guy like Robert De Niro could come in and bring life to it with charisma and performance that you can't top Ali already. When We Were Kings is the greatest showcase for why he meant so much to so many people and why, as an athlete, he transcended even the sport that he was the best at.
Mm-hmm. Right, and even Norman Mailer's in it, and he talks about it, and he's so great in it, right? I mean, it's just so interesting to hear him talk, and I love the story towards the end where he's like, you know, I saw Ali, and I was out with my wife, and Ali said something to me, you know, the champ said something, and he's like, why are you still with that loser, you know? But he said something nice about me, and I was like a puppy dog who had just been patted on the back. I had to go pee. I had to go to the bathroom because the greatest had just patted me on the head. And
that was another thing he did, was he brought out the best on a lot of those writers.
Yeah.
If you've ever read Norman Mailer's story from Zaire, it's spectacular. Or some of the stuff that Dick Schaap got to write from that time. And there's, if you ever check out the Best American Sports Writing of the Century, it's this like 900-page thing that I've made my way through. But there's a whole section at the end that's just Ali.
Wow.
And it's got like six incredible Ali stories, because every other sport combined had as much good writing about it as Ali did at that time. It was just this it was this convergence of great minds, great writers, social unrest, social turmoil, and an athlete as compelling as him, all coming together to create something that is uncreatable ever again. And that's why that Ali movie is so uneven. You know, it's not the real thing. So When We Were Kings, I might go watch that later today. A couple things I wanted to toss out. I want to see what your reaction is to Hoosiers. Hoosiers is a movie that appears on, if it's not number one on the sports movies list, it's usually in the top 10. I think Hoosiers is bad. Counterpoint?
This is a conversation I had, my wife and I, when we were talking about what's my favorite sports movie. She's like, well, what about Hoosiers? And I'm like, it's been a while since I've seen Hoosiers, but I think it's not good. Like, I remember enjoying it a lot when I was a kid, but when I look back and think about it now, like, Gene Hackman's character is not terribly likable in a lot of ways to me, you know?
We've talked a lot about Gene Hackman's character in that movie, but we call him Bo Ryan.
Right, exactly. Yeah, that's the problem. I think that it hasn't aged well in terms of our understanding of basketball and
not
basketball
at all.
Culture.
That's right.
Four passes before every shot. Right. Give me a break. That's nonsense. Right. He was objectively a bad coach.
Right.
And in addition to being a complete jerk who got kicked out of his first school for punching a kid.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
Now won't let the best guy in the entire town shoot the ball as often. What's even happening? And then like the ultimate moral of that story is that a scrappy group of white kids, if playing the right way, can beat the superior black team?
Right.
Is that what the movie's trying to say? Spike Lee has a great essay about this.
And oh, huh.
When, if you watch this movie through the lens of somebody that's like Spike Lee, that mm-hmm. you know it deals with race in his films, and you watch Hoosiers from that perspective, it is regressive at best. Yeah, it's mm-hmm. about the nicest thing you could say about it.
Yeah.
But there's still like Dennis Hopper's really good in it. I think Hackman, his performance is really good. I just think Norman Dale's a monster.
Yeah,
and I also think that there's a problem with Hoosiers. That's also a problem in other sports movies. Is whenever they introduce a woman. The mm-hmm. woman exists to nag. Mm-hmm. The woman is just another obstacle for the man to overcome. Mm-hmm. And that's a big issue with a lot of these movies is the women, they're ornamental.
Right.
And that's always made me uncomfortable and why one of my favorite sports movies that does not get talked about because we can get into a lot of the reasons why it doesn't get mentioned with the Pantheon. Love and Basketball is an incredible movie.
Mm.
It's maybe one of the best romantic movies I've ever seen. It's one of the most well-acted movies I've ever seen.
Yeah.
It tells a story that you don't often get to see with the way, like a relationship between a star athlete, Nomar Epps, and Sanaa Lathan, who is every bit his equal in this movie. She's not ornamental. She's actually maybe better than him. And it's this... It's just a really good film that you can watch. Like, it's a date night film. It's a movie that you can watch with your daughter. It's really uplifting in ways that you wouldn't expect it to be. And I just don't know why they don't make. I do know why they don't make as many of these movies because they're targeting it to like dumb boys and underdeveloped right. male sensibilities. But I just think there's always been a better opportunity to tell sweeter stories.
Well, I think that you touched on part of the problem with a lot of sports movies, which is that they're made from a very cynical place of just trying to like check a demographic box. They're like, all right, well, what's a movie we can put out that's going to get our male, you know, 18 to...
The Varsity Blues.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
Which I've seen 10 times. I mean, I'm not one to criticize any of this, but yeah, Varsity Blues. It's very cynical. It's directed specifically at a certain audience.
And it's based on a couple of false assumptions. One, it's based on the assumption that only men care about sports.
Right.
And beyond that, that the type of man who cares about sports is... the kind of man who also likes like a healthy dose of gratuitous female nudity and does view women in the way that you described as being accessories or obstacles rather than agents.
Right.
I might be overrating the average person, but I think most people have a more nuanced appreciation.
I think so.
Of even sports fans are a bit more nuanced than they exist within the world of the Hollywood marketing executive.
And they would perhaps be more nuanced if presented with those options.
Exactly. Yes, exactly.
Because a lot of it there's a condescension to it.
Yeah.
You know, these dummies will watch this.
Mm-hmm.
These dumb jerks.
Yeah.
You know, when a movie like Love and Basketball did not tear up the box office, and it's not even really on cable that often. But right. if anyone watches that movie, they'll come away thinking, "Well, that was a lot better than I thought it was going to be."
Mm-hmm.
And why didn't you think it was going to be good? Like, did you think it was like a chick flick?
Right.
No, it's a great movie,
mm-hmm.
and I will go to bat for that thing 10 times out of 10. Another. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
I was going to throw out my favorite recent sports movie is a movie that's not about sports. And that's Whiplash.
Oh, it's so good.
Whiplash is a sports movie.
It's so good.
I mean, it has all of the beat. When you think about what a sports movie is as a genre.
Striving for excellence.
Yeah. It essentially has the structure of a sports movie, not only in terms of the way that the central drama and conflict is set up, but even also just the idea of, you know, these long training montages and
the sacrifices.
The sacrifice and the struggle with the, you know, dealing with your family or the people who around you who don't understand what it means to strive for greatness. Because Whiplash, at its core, it's a movie about greatness. And a lot of sports movies, in some way or another, are grappling with that same subject. What is the cost of greatness? What are the sacrifices that are entailed in it, and is it ultimately worth it? And part of what I like about Whiplash is that even though it has this veneer of being about a sort of form of higher culture than sports, the reality is that whether you're killing yourself to become the world's greatest jazz drummer or you're killing yourself to become the world's greatest point guard, it's just as trivial in terms of the grand scheme of human existence. They're both...
That's right.
It's an internal drive.
Right. Yeah, exactly. So I thought that in terms of recent films, and really, I mean, I can't think of too many, period, that stack up to being able to capture in a really lean, efficient, and compelling way the drama and the drive that underlies our interest in sports and in sort of dominant sports figures.
One thing that's really interesting about Whiplash, though, that the typical sports movie doesn't deal with, Whiplash actually asks the question whether or not this is a good thing to do.
Yes.
Every sports movie just takes it at face value. Of course you want to be great. Mm-hmm. Whatever it is that requires you to get there makes you a good person.
Right.
Everyone's goal is the same. The outcome... winning the championship is the only thing that matters, mm-hmm. and everything else will click in after the fact. Your family will love you. Your friends will love you. Your emotional fulfillment, shrug. You know,
right.
Who cares? But Whiplash actually poses those questions. Mm-hmm. And is J.K. Simmons a bad guy or a good guy? It doesn't answer that for you. You have to come to the conclusion on your own. And one thing I want to ask you about Whiplash, how much money would you pay to watch it with Kobe Bryant?
Oh my God!
I would love to know what Kobe. I would read, like, if the Players Tribune exists, so Kobe Bryant can write a 10,000-word review on Whiplash.
Yeah. Oh my God. Yeah. That would be incredible. And honestly, I think you have to view it through the lens of a Kobe or a Michael Jordan. I mean, but we were off the air. I was relaying a story earlier about John Malkovich was. A guest color commentator on NBA Summer League yesterday, and it was really, really wonderful for a lot of different reasons. But he grew up with Doug Collins, and he told a little anecdote about Doug Collins once talking to him about Michael Jordan's competitiveness. And obviously, Michael Jordan is notoriously maybe the most competitive athlete in history, to the point of being a sociopath.
But talked about in a good way.
Right.
We only recently have we started to ask whether or not this is a good thing. But the whole mythos of Michael Jordan was that his competitiveness was a virtue.
And other athletes, particularly basketball players who are sort of striving to reach anything approximating his level of greatness, they're almost judged negatively if they're less sociopathically competitive.
Right.
It's seen as being a knock on guys.
Weakness.
Weakness. That they don't have that will to win is what we call it.
Yeah, LeBron wanting to be friends with people is somehow a problem.
Right, yeah. But anyway, so the story is, he says, Doug Collins tells John Malkovich, he says, Johnny, if Michael Jordan played your five-year-old in ping pong, he'd have to win 21-0 and bounce every single ball off the center of your kid's forehead. And that is the trait of an insane person.
Yeah.
Of a true, literal sociopath. And it is almost certainly true. And it's borne out by every story about Michael Jordan getting in fistfights with teammates and about insisting. This is one of my favorites. He now, because he's so competitive that he has to find outlets for it, he's really into word searches now.
Oh, my God.
Really, really into word searches. So when he, like, travels places with his entourage, he'll have, like, copies of word searches to do with other people so he can beat them in the word searches. And,
That's nutty.
We're not talking about – when I say word searches, I really mean what you think I mean, where, you know, it's like the grid of letters and you have to find, like, the words. He's insane about it because he has to find something. So again, Whiplash asks that question about, is Michael Jordan, is that laudable? Should we want our children to grow up to try to be Michael Jordan or to be Terrence Fletcher in Whiplash? And I don't know. I mean, you're going to be a father soon. Rusty, you are a father. Would you want, like, how would you feel if your son grew up to be Michael Jordan?
I'd say quit being a jerk.
Yeah, yeah. I didn't teach you to be a jerk.
I don't like being around you.
No.
You're making me miserable.
Right.
Yeah, you know, that's exactly where I would go. I would be really disappointed.
And that's why you're bad fathers.
I didn't. No.
I want a very good, very nice kid. I might.
Yeah.
Do I want an excellent jerk? I don't know if I want an excellent jerk.
Yeah. Yeah.
But Kelly might differ. Kelly might want Michael Jordan. Kelly is the number one Kobe defender in our household. She loves these maniac competitive people because she's kind of one too. She won't tell you that, but she needs to win. So I'll let her and the kid win.
That's interesting. You know, this conversation's gone on really well, and I really love this talk. We could have one just about baseball movies, as far as I'm concerned.
Oh, totally.
Absolutely. We haven't even touched
on
that, really.
Even Kevin Costner baseball movies.
Even Kevin Costner baseball movies.
Yeah.
It's true. But Eight Men Out by John Sayles, by the great director John Sayles.
Beautiful movie.
It's a beautiful film. It's really, really nuanced and thoughtful, and it's a great period piece. I just wanted to say how much I love that film and how I could get lost in that film over and over again. I love going to that universe. And
I'm a little bummed out that didn't catch on in cable repeats the way The Natural did.
Yeah.
Because it evokes a similar era. You know, Eight Men Out's much darker.
Oh, much darker.
But and The Natural is a fairy tale. But with I think that's probably one of the better Redford performances. I'm not a huge Robert Redford guy,
but I think he's
the right kind of stoic for that part. And you know, there's huge scenes in that movie. You know, it's like when you watch The Natural, it's like listening to Oasis, where it just has these huge choruses. You know, it's just like genetically engineered massive moments.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
You know, if you kind of look at it, it's like it's okay. But if you're actually watching it, you're like, you get swept up when he shatters all the lights.
Oh, you do. You do. And my son really loved that when he was very little. When he was like 4, he loved The Natural. It's such a crazy thing, but he did. And so we ended up buying the director's cut.
Oh, I have the director's cut.
And it's better. I would say it's better, the director's cut. I like it that it's through the lens of a guy looking back as opposed to it all happening in real time. Because those early scenes with Robert Redford as a teenager don't make any sense.
Especially because he looks like he's 55.
He looks like he's 55, you know? They don't have a spring in their step at all.
Yeah.
I mean, he just does not come across as a teenager. And so when he's looking back and you see him looking back on himself as a teenager and he's an old guy, that kind of works. That kind of works as a storytelling device.
It's much better framing.
It really is. And also, obviously, A League of Their Own is another baseball film that really is great. And that's one where they let the women shine.
Well, I thought A League of Their Own it's weird that it shouldn't have been revolutionary that they would tell a story about women and especially women during the wartime, but that's one of my favorite movies, and it's one of my favorite Tom Hanks performances.
Oh yeah.
I think he's so charming, and I think there's a real sadness to him in that movie that he's allowed to go to, and I think Gary Marshall is the owner's really silly, and I could watch A League of Their Own any time of day, it comes on. I think the relationship between Gina Davis and Lori Petty is really strong. That's a great call. I hadn't thought about A League of Their Own, but that is one of the great baseball
movies. One of the great baseball movies, and again, it doesn't denigrate women, and that's why I like Bull Durham so much, too, is the women in that. Susan Sarandon is so powerful and so strong.
She's the one in charge.
She's the one in charge, and I love that. We don't see that enough, where women are in charge in film.
Can I talk a little bit about Bull Durham in that, you know, Sarandon's performance is the highlight of that movie, but Costner showed an athleticism that carried him throughout that whole stretch because he can really swing a baseball bat.
Yeah.
He can really swing a golf club, and there was a reason why he appeared in so many sports movies. I think that was a huge reason why Dennis Quaid didn't have the career he should have because he didn't get into sports movies until The Rookie.
Mm.
You know, where
that is interesting.
But I feel like Costner kind of swiped all the parts that Quaid would have had during that stretch. conversely, in that movie, Tim Robbins cannot throw a baseball. he looks so. The revisionist history is that he hurt himself early and that he had to compensate because he like pulled a rib trying to throw the fastball too hard. Because if you actually sit there and watch Nuke LaLoosh throw and that this kid's supposed to be like a hot shot, no, it doesn't. He's not. That's something that takes me out of that movie.
Well, and that's a really good example of one of the things that is a challenge, whether it's TV shows or sports movies. A lot of them struggle once they actually start to show the product.
Yeah.
On the field or on the court.
Because they're supposed to be great.
It's and we're actually, let's go back to something that you alluded to before, which is a problem with Studio 60 from the Sunset Strip. So Studio 60, that failed Aaron Sorkin show, it's supposed to be about this like really cutting edge sketch comedy show.
A total genius.
Yeah, total genius. It's like peak era SNL, but even more like socially biting and you know, kind of the center of meaningful comedy.
Like if Mr. Show was writing for SNL.
Mm. Yeah, but like with a more overt political bent and like
the Al Franken
cut. Yeah, exactly. But the problem is every time they'd show a sketch, an actual sketch, it was abysmal. Like sub Mad TV quality and stupid and like redeeming value whatsoever. So that's kind of the problem that you have sometimes. Even if you cast actors who plausibly look the part of athletes, they're not athletes.
Right.
So there are limits to what you can depict on the playing field.
And there's all these like really close edits, like they're right on top of them when they're shooting a jumper or something.
Right.
Because it's just doesn't look it.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's a real issue that you run into with sports films. And
Denzel
sports
Washington
shows.
In He Got Game can really play basketball.
Yeah.
So they were able to keep the camera back and actually show an actual basketball game with Ray Allen, a professional basketball player.
Who's really good in that movie, I think.
I thought so, too.
It's not a perfect movie, but Ray Allen's genuinely very good in that movie, I think.
The best sports movie of all time is hidden in He Got Game.
Yeah. You know, that's a really very astute observation, I think, because it's like 75% of the way there.
It's so close. But Spike Lee, he was so mad at Hoosiers that when he came to make his basketball movie, he botched a couple of things almost as a response to the way that these movies were made. Mm-hmm. And then there's that whole nonsense subplot with Mila Jovovich that if you just get rid of that.
Yeah.
We could re-edit He Got Game on another episode. But it is hard to get athletes that can really play, which is why I think Kevin Costner shows up in so many of these sports movies and Omar Epps shows up in so many. I think Omar Epps is every kind of athlete you can be. He was a basketball player in Love and Basketball. He plays baseball in Major League 2 when they sub out Wesley Snipes and just say he's Willie Mays Hayes now. There's no explanation offered. It's just Omar Epps now. He's a track star in Boys in the Hood. I think he's a boxer in a really bad movie with Meg Ryan called Against the Ropes. You can go all the way down the list. He's done it all. And there's a reason, because there's so many of these actors look weird playing sports. Tom Cruise is reasonably athletic, and even he looks weird when he's shooting a basketball.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of basketball players look weird shooting a basketball.
Yeah, Reggie Miller looks weird.
Oh, yeah, it's not easy to do.
Yeah, to have that Ray Allen-looking jumper takes years to get there.
I do hope that in his post-career life that Ray Allen finds an excuse to make another movie again. It would be maybe He Got Game 2, where he's now in the sort of Denzel-aged role. But no, seriously, he really, I mean, he was, what, 19, 20 years old when he made that movie?
Yeah, he was very young.
He was, I mean, he was really, really young.
I think he had been in the NBA a little bit, hadn't he?
That's true. You know, you're right. He was a couple years in. Yeah, he was probably like 23, 24.
Yeah, and he was big but not huge.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was interesting that Spike Lee picked him. He probably talked to a bunch of different NBA guys just courtside at Knicks games. Hey, you want to be in this movie?
Right.
That's how he cast the thing, was just talking to these guys. But no, Ray Allen's really good in that movie. And that's one of my favorite Denzel performances, too.
Yeah.
And that gets lost when you start talking about Denzel's career. But him as the dad in He Got Game is phenomenal, because he's not just the good guy. He's not just a monster. It's a real person, a really troubled guy. Mm-hmm. Who could. And you know the story about that one-on-one game at the end of the movie. Denzel actually hit those couple shots on him, and that when he starts trash talking, that's real trash talk. And Ray Allen got really mad because
that's
great. The game,
that is great.
As scripted, it was supposed to be 10-0, Ray Allen was just supposed to wipe the floor with him. But Denzel hit a couple on him, like, because Denzel can play a little bit.
Sure.
And it was like the time of his life that he was like up 2-0 on this NBA stud that had 6 inches on him. And he's just chirping the whole time. And then when Ray Allen's like dunking on him, it's like he's really dunking on him because he's really upset that this actor is, you know, talking trash. I want to talk about one more movie before we go, and it's White Men Can't Jump. I feel like White Men Can't Jump has, it's dated, but it's beautifully dated. It's dated in the way that like Nate Dogg is dated. When you hear like these old like 90s hip hop songs, it's like, oh God, that makes me feel good to hear that. But when I watch White Men Can't Jump, there's stuff in it that is that does, like, Wesley Snipes is not a convincing basketball player, but he's a really good athlete. Mm-hmm. Woody Harrelson is not a very good athlete, but he's a convincing basketball player.
He really is, right? Mm-hmm. Like, you believe it.
And I just felt like that was the most fun sports movie. It's the sports movie that captures most of why we like sports. Mm-hmm. It's silly, it's lighthearted, it's infinitely watchable, and it doesn't take itself that seriously, and I feel like it's a lot of what we do on the show.
Yeah, I think not take itself seriously is what it gets right. It really does get that fairly well. It's a very fun movie to watch. I haven't watched it in a long time, but it's something I could go back and watch pretty easily, I think.
Yeah, I don't know. I disagree with you softies. I like sports because of the Al Pacino speech in Any Given Sunday. Okay.
You like to fight for that inch. You got to die for that inch. Yeah, but even Any Given Sunday is really funny.
It is actually.
It's a good movie. It's a very good movie.
That's what Ballers should be.
Yeah.
Ballers wants to be Any Given Sunday, but it can't go there because it's got actual NFL licensing.
Yeah, well, you know, that was one thing I wanted to bring up before. First of all, I was really surprised when I found out that it had actual NFL licensing as opposed to being the Miami Sharks.
Right.
You know? But it also, I think it has to, from everything we know about the NFL and the control that they have over their brand, I think that that sort of doomed them from the start from being able to do anything that was really, you know, a meaningful critique or exploration of the darker side of the NFL.
Because ESPN tried to do that with Playmakers.
Right.
And that did not get off the ground because the NFL had no interest in continuing a business relationship with a network that had a show like that.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah.
But, you know,
very careful about their image.
Yeah. Ultimately, though, some of these sports movies give you an opportunity to see the things that you do like about sports already while offering you a chance for really compelling Hollywood actor types to have a little bit of fun on screen. So that's going to do it for our show this week. Let's hear about what you got going on, Rusty. What's the current look like this week?
The current, I've been on a real hot streak, I feel like. I've had some real fun on my shows lately. But I've got Nikki Radhe is going to be my guest.
The photographer
and event coordinator for the Reed Park Zoo.
Very fun.
Yeah, she's a friend, and I really am looking forward to having her on the air.
That's great. Matt Milner, anything you want to tell us about?
Yeah, John D is going to come on and talk about the new John's album on Locals Only tomorrow night. And I really like John. He's a nice guy, and the Johns have been around for a shockingly long amount of time now.
They're a Tucson institution.
Yeah, it's crazy. So anyway, they've got a new album, and they're going to talk about that.
And I think I'm going to get a sports movie of my own off the ground after talking about all this. I have a pretty good sense of what makes a good sports movie, and this might be my ticket out of here. I'm going to get that sports screenplay sold. I'll leave you guys in the dust so fast.
Let me tell you, just watch The Sandlot about 5 times, because there's your blueprint right there.
How many times have I seen The Sandlot? I want to say 200?
Oh, my gosh. And I've grown to a point where I can watch it and not want to just throw things at it, but it's so schmaltzy. When I first saw it, it hurt me to hear
those. It's
sugary
sweet.
Oh, my gosh. Those lines and the delivery hurt.
See, this is one of those areas, I guess, where the difference in our age is meaningful, because I will defend The Sandlot to the death.
I'm right there with him.
And
right,
I think a big part of it is I experienced it as a child.
Yeah.
You know, it came out like, but
I
still,
was their age.
Yeah, exactly. I was their age when it came out, and I will defend that movie to the death. That is a great movie.
Ruby loves it.
There you go. Ruby's got good taste.
Yeah. So that's going to do it for us here on Can't Wait, and we're going to keep doing this until someone tells us not to.